Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Like Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, Anthony Irwin.
Like this guy here. His name is Fagan. Harrison Fagan.
Welcome back to the Silver Screen Roll podcast feed. Normally, this would be an I Love Basketball podcast, but seeing as that would be a blatant lie, I'm going to go ahead and record a Lakers lounge, a second Lakers lounge for this week. I am Joy. That giggle in the background was Jacob Rude. Jacob was in charge of the Zoom quotes after the game, after the Lakers lose. I honestly, dude, I've been legitimately thinking about this. This might be the worst loss of my lifetime. Like,
God!
When you consider this is a team that has championship aspirations, this is an Oklahoma City team that's own fan base and people covering that team were joking about 0-82. This is a Oklahoma City Thunder team that was down 41-19 after one quarter, and then wound up coming back to nearly beat them. Beat the Lakers by double digits. The Lakers at one point held a 26-point lead. They lose by 8. That, by my calculations, is what, a 36-point swing over that time span. I want to keep this one short because I don't want to lose my job. But I'm kind of curious, like, how was, you know, you get the frustrated quotes after a game like this. The one whose quotes I actually kind of enjoyed was Anthony Davis, where it felt like the questions that were being asked of him were like opportunities to make excuses. They were opportunities to kind of, you know, just kind of let the water off duck's feathers, you know. But yet he still kind of took responsibility and accountability for this one. That at least is a bright spot.
Maybe? AD certainly was not letting the team off the hook in any way. He was adamant that this was a game that they should have won. This was a stretch of games, he said, that they should have gotten into a rhythm and gotten comfortable again. He tried to catch himself because he was basically going to say this is a stretch of games against, you know, not good, not good teams that they should beat. And he kind of caught himself in the middle of the sentence and was like, well, damn, we just lost to this team. So, but I mean, he's not wrong. That's what this was supposed to be. Just a frustrating game. A quick story that I think is a fitting summary of what tonight was like. Midway through this game, when it looked like we were running away with it, at halftime, I recorded my Locked On podcast, and I'm glancing over. I have the game on mute, and I'm like, wow, that's a 17-point lead. Wow, that's a 12-point lead. Wow, that's an 8-point lead. And I finally got done, and I unmute. And literally as I unmute, my roommate texts me as well that, oh, hey, by the way, your toilet is backing up into your bathtub. And currently right now, you guys can't see it, but there's a plumber here. It's 11:55 at night. Our house is destroyed. And I was like, you know, I mean, that pretty much sums up how this night went. a good anecdote for, or good comparison for this Lakers game. Cause yeah, halfway through it, I was like, dope. This is a blowout win. This will be an easy recap, easy night of quotes. And then, yeah, it all went south.
Second, third, and fourth quarters happened.
Yeah, it all went south. And, we started backing up into the bathtub, so to speak, and this
just
was
a whole bunch of shit just flying all over the
place. I wasn't going to say it. I was going to allude to it, but yeah, this was the second, third, and fourth quarters were shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we really got to get you out of here then as quickly as possible.
My roommates are currently dealing with it, but yeah, it was just like everything at once was like, oh, the Lakers are losing and you have plumbing issues at 10:30, 11 o'clock at night.
That is unbelievable. I don't even know how to follow that. Like I legitimately, I don't know what else to say here. You have done you have done what like everybody who has ever known me thinks is the impossible. I'm speechless. I have nothing to say.
Harrison, give me a raise. I just made Anthony speechless. Yeah, I mean,
Jacob Root is celebrating. He just got my job. Like, if I can't speak, I can't be audio for screen and roll.
Hey, whatever it takes. This is a ruthless world, and hire Jacob is back into or no longer in effect. I guess
when life gives you shit, you take
your take it,
job.
Turn it into a podcast story, and take your co-host job.
All right, so we just got to look for like Malik Monk to take a shitty story and take Russell Westbrook's job. So I think, you know, if we were to look at who should be held most to account for this game, where are you looking first?
Ooh, that's interesting. I don't know. Russ is pretty high up there. Those turnovers were... We're brutal. It's weird to say that on a night he had a triple double and for the first quarter and a half when they got up to that 26 point lead, he was really good. But God, those were some brutal turnovers. That 3-pointer at the end of the game was horrific.
Like, you should have heard the room that I was watching that game in. My folks are in town. Jen was up watching. We're just like, he shoots the ball and all of us. Basically, various iterations of the F word. It was just what the immediately what the nobody in the arena except for Russ thought that was a good idea. Not a single soul. Unbelievable.
I knew, and I had written about like Russ is a high volume, low efficiency 3-point shooter. Seeing it in action is just mind boggling because it's like, dude, none of these are going in. Why do you think the next one's going in? And when they went under the screen, there was like that brief moment where I was like, don't shoot this. And then he shot it. And it's like, why? Like you knew the result when he did it. So that was, was brutal.
It reminded me back when I was playing pickup where like the two things that you didn't want to hear on a pickup court were the worst is he's with us. Right. That's the worst. That's the absolute, like, if you hear that on a court, it might be time to fight, right? And then the other one is why do you think you're so open?
Yeah.
Like, why do you think the defense is that willing to give that look to you? And like, with Russ, when he's taking these, it's not just the three-pointers. He shot 8 of them tonight, which, like, by the way, any time Russ shoots more than 4 three-pointers in a game, you should be fined for every 3-pointer above 4 there within. And then like with his mid-range jumpers too, right? The reason defenses give him that shot isn't just because like that's the only chance they have it staying in front of him. It's because he doesn't punish them for backing off. Like he's a bad shooter. He doesn't have good form. He, in my opinion, shoots on his way down and tries to make up for it by shooting with extra arc. And like, it's just not a good shot. And, you know, tonight, you know, it was funny that this winds up following the game where everybody says, well, this is why you trade for Russ. This is why you trade for Russ. And then like the response to it was like, this is why everybody in the league was happy that you traded for Russ. Like it's tough to watch this guy. And you want to root for him because he does seem like all of his teammates say he's been one of their better teammates ever. All of the like team employees and his family, like he just seems like a decent human being, but he's just this like fatally flawed movie character. He's Kendall Roy, where like at this point we're how far into Succession, and he's still plotting against his dad and relying on his family to plot against his dad. And everybody watching the show at this point knows, dude, this isn't going to work out, bud. Like, what? Find another avenue here. And it's like with Russ, he's coming in, he's in semi-transition, or it's early in the shot clock and somebody goes under the screen and he goes up to shoot. And it's like, no, no, don't do that shit. And I think like beyond even just the shot selection, which is going to be something that we deal with all year. Like that's just who Russell Westbrook is. But the where I was the most disappointed in this game was he got right back to after in the San Antonio game. I thought he did a really good job, and I thought the Lakers did a really good job of creating angles to where he could attack the rim with purpose and get in there. And if San Antonio played him to pass and begged him to pass and begged him to pass, he just said, no, I guess this means I got to shoot. Like, this means I got to get to the rim. And I think in this one, OKC did the same thing where they just backed off. And he never really attacked the rim with any real force. And you know, like that's something that is fixable. If anything, that's something that like, that is who Russell Westbrook is. That's why, like when I saw it last night, I said, hey, this might mean he's turning a corner figuratively and literally, right? Is like, hey, this could be Russ figuring it out. And then he goes right back to kind of the weak penetration that he had earlier this season, and then compounded that with the shot selection. And this was like, this was the bad Russ game. This was the empty triple double game that we've been hearing about all his career.
Yeah, this is 100% an empty triple double. They kept talking about it on the broadcast as the Lakers are like slowly losing their lead. And they're like, oh, he's one rebound away from a triple double. I'm like, I really don't give a damn right now. Like, he's also two turnovers away from a quadruple double.
The poor Lakers social media team,
yeah,
they have to send out like, hey, he got a triple double, look at him go. And it's like, you know, I said, like, read the room. Nobody here is happy to hear this. If anything, it just it again just makes the jokes that everybody lobs at Russell Westbrook all the more kind of painful. The other guy, I think, like, because we could, it's very easy, I think, for people to like keep on Frank Vogel. And I think of people who are to blame here, and he does deserve some blame. Like, he keeping Melo in after a dead ball situation when you're heading into a defensive possession, like that was a brutal mistake. And it led to Favors getting a shot at the rim, a wide open shot at the rim, because none of the Lakers guards can tag rollers, apparently.
It's but brutal, like, to watch his team try to defend pick and rolls. God.
It's just constantly getting hit in the head with the same goddamn hammer.
Yeah.
So like for me, when I'm looking at people who I'm holding to account in this game, I agree with you about Russ. I think AD deserves some here, you know? And that's before, like, I see a lot of people questioning Rob Pelinka now for the way that he put his team together, to which I would say, like, I'm pretty sure I saw all of you in my mentions over the summer calling me an awful human being and all that stuff. But, like, even there, though, like, if you're going to hold Rob Pelinka accountable to that, there were also reports that, like, LeBron James put this team together in his wine cellar, right? And so, like, if you're gonna say it's personnel, then all right, then LeBron gets some blame here. But if we were to focus in on the actual game that was played, I think AD has to take his lumps in this pod, because he, again, like, he's so talented that he could sleepwalk to 38-2-1, you know, 12 of 22 shooting, 6 of 7 from the free throw line. Like, you look at just those stats and you'd say, like, hey, he wasn't the problem. But you look at who he was playing against and he's like, okay, yeah, maybe he was the problem, because he needed to be more of the solution. He wasn't the solution at all in this game. And it was really kind of frustrating to watch him dip back into his, like, Zach Randolph impersonation. where everything is from like the mid range and out. Mm-hmm. And he's just, he's so much more athletic than Zach Randolph that when he does that, all the other teams, when he takes fadeaway jumpers, that's when everybody on the other team like just takes a nice, thank goodness, you know, because every time he gets something going to the basket, especially against this team, he looks incredible, unstoppable. And I like, I was really kind of bummed out watching only 8 rebounds in this one is a tough one. 0 block shots. Like he was just, it was empty carbs from AD tonight.
So, excuse me, there's a lot of empty sets in general, but AD was one. I don't know with AD because, like, he certainly deserves blame. Not in that regard, I don't know. I honestly couldn't even tell you other than Derek Favors. I watched the game. I was listening to the game. I don't know who was guarding him for most of the game because I just – the Thunder are just full of so many guys I don't know. But it was somebody that was multiple inches shorter than him. And
yeah, like Roby or
– Roby, I think. Kenrich Williams might have defended him a little bit too, but it's just guys where it was like, and he did it at times, and he did it at the end of the game when he basically had to. He just got to the rim like with ease, and he finished at the rim. He cleaned up some shots, some misses at the rim, and it's just like when he gets a rebound, walks down the court, and pulls up from like just inside the 3-point line from like 18 feet and misses a pull up mid-range jumper 6 seconds into the shot clock. You're like, what are we doing? Like, why? I understand that. I mean, we saw him in the playoffs and like when that jumper is going, it's incredible and he's unstoppable. But like on the night when you're playing the Thunder and they have like one legitimate center and the rest are just like forwards masquerading as centers and you're blowing a lead and like you need any baskets you can when you're hemorrhaging points. I don't want to see like you walk into a 18, 20 footer, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like 6-8 seconds into the shot clock, like just back a guy down. Like it wasn't even like hard work to back a guy down and get into the paint. And even if it wasn't him scoring, there were times when they had to double him. It led to a layup from him. I can't remember who exactly it was, but somebody was wide open under the basket, a layup like that. And it's just so
– I remember he almost missed it. I freaked out.
Yeah, and it's just so much better offense than what the Lakers were running at the end of the game, especially those final, like, three possessions. Game on the line, and you go with that Russ three-pointer. They play incredible defense to get the ball back. And then Malik hoists, I don't know what that was. And then they get gifted another opportunity. And Melo said after the game, he rushed the shot, that he basically saw daylight, didn't have control of the ball, and just rushed the shot. But, like, man, the Thunder were tanking. They were trying to give us the win.
I would see what's their coach's name? It's like Darno or something like that.
They showed him and I'm like that guy looks like the janitor. There's no chance that's the coach.
He was also like, dude, if you're gonna wear a turtleneck, like at least let it like wrap around your neck. I don't know what he was wearing there. And look, I'm somebody who has a few chins, and so turtlenecks aren't really an option. And so I just stay away from them. I didn't know what he was doing. But like I think it was like Dagno and I'm watching him, you know, on the sideline, and I was waiting for him to check his phone so that we could get a picture of it and then grab a meme and say, like, it's Sam Presti saying, like, have you tried an 8-second count? Have you tried just throwing the ball to Carmelo Anthony? Have you tried? Yeah, man, we tried. They just keep blowing the shit. But I want to go back to like the actual decisions that led to some of those shots, right? So like Russell Westbrook, you know, gets a pick and roll in a game that you were down by 3, right? And you have enough time to where, all right, you get that pick and roll. And if the point of it is to start going downhill and get to the rim and either like, you know, get to the free throw line or get a quick 2 and turn it into more of a free throw game because OKC had some bad free throw shooters. Like if that's the intent, then okay. Like I understand the call there, but to take that screen and immediately just pull up with, I think it was like 15 seconds left or something like that in the game. You just, again, you're bailing out the defense. And then the Monk set that they ran was like not a set. Like Russ dribbled over to the side. Monk went and got the ball at the top of the key. And at no point, you're not going to include Anthony Davis in either of those plays other than like some weak kind of screen that doesn't accomplish anything. Like, what is going on? And that's where, like, that's where I'm fine. If people want to hold Frank accountable for stuff, that's where I'm perfectly fine doing it, because that is his job. I was wondering if he lost his marker and was like left to, you know, spitting on the floor and hoping to diagram plays with his finger. And that's like the most he can literally write there was Russ dribble over there, Monk come over here, get the ball, Monk, you do you, right? Like it was just brutal to watch. And that's where I'm, you know, there were some decisions late in the game. Vogel also said that the offense stagnated and that he wasn't doing enough to get some movement out there. That I would also completely agree with. I don't think I saw in the fourth quarter an off-ball screen, like which is insane. And yeah, like it was just this confluence of errors that all went the absolute worst way that they could possibly go. And yet, like, the Lakers had opportunities to win this thing. And it tells you, one, how talented they are, that they could literally sleepwalk through three quarters of a game and still have an opportunity to at least eke one out, despite it being against an inferior opponent. So that's one thing that you could, if you're looking for optimism, you could point to. But the other thing, too, is that, like, you're the older team. Like, which team between the two teams there looked more poised? It was OKC far and away.
That after the game, Vogel was talking about, like, oh, this is a lesson we had to learn to not let or take your foot off the gas. And I'm like, you have way too many veterans on this team to need to teach that lesson.
Right.
Like that should be one of the things that you shouldn't have to worry about is that these guys know to keep the foot on the throat and finish the game off. And when, so, I mean, he kind of has to say that, but when he said it, I was just like, isn't this the point of having all these veterans? Also, I'm watching back this Malik Monk play. I don't know what the play call was. I think he might have gone rogue on that one because both AD and Melo were pointing to Russ as if like pass the ball to Russ. And it looked like AD was setting up to come across for a screen with the floor spaced out. And Malik was still feeling hot from Wednesday's game and hoisted one because immediately after that as well, AD went over to him and just kind of asked him what the hell was that. But still, like, it was just so frustrating because even if you just – take two pointers on these shots, like you win the game because they were literally handing you the game. There was just a lot of things that like I said, the most frustrating thing is that this is a veteran team that shouldn't be doing a lot of these things. Ultimately, you're going to have these kind of frustrating losses throughout the season. You don't have 26 point blown leads very often, but frustrating losses throughout the season. But it was just the nature of this one where it's like, you have a lot of guys who played a lot of years in the NBA that should know better than to do this. So when you ask like, who do I put the blame on the most? It's really just kind of like a team wide thing because there's
the answer is yes.
Yeah. There's just way too many guys who know better. It shouldn't come down to Malik Monk hoisting a three after going rogue on one of the final plays to it should never come down to that. So this was just an all-around like team loss, I think.
And I think if you really listen closely to that play, and it's hard to pick it up because the Oklahoma City fans were going so nuts, but like if you listen super closely, you can clearly hear Malik Monk scream out, "Leroy Jenkins!"
He was talking after Wednesday's game about he had unlimited range and he thinks every shot he shoots is going in, but there might be a limit to it with your sidestep, like 28 footer. It was a Leroy Jenkins moment. Absolutely. For sure.
It wasn't like either SGA or Dort was guarding him. It wasn't some like It wasn't some switch that Monk could have thought he could take advantage of. I remember looking at it as like, that's what we're going for here. Like that guy on that guy.
Yeah. It's SGA on him, and Dort was on Russ. So
yeah,
he was feeling himself. He hit a game winner. Well, not a game winner, just a big shot the night before. And he thought I can do that again. And he airballed it, and a lesson learned. I'll allow him to learn a lesson. I'm not allowing the rest of the Lakers to learn a lesson.
In fairness, I think Monk is what, in his fourth year. So, yeah. And like three of those seasons were with bad Charlotte teams. And like, those are some habits that you're going to have to like teach your way and learn your way through. So yeah, I'll grant him some of that. We are five games in. Okay. I've been pretty loud about not being particularly fond of this roster. So as somebody who is maybe more fond of this roster, like, do you find yourself questioning the makeup quite yet, or is it still too early for that?
I'm not necessarily fond of it.
I'm saying more fond of it than I am.
Yeah.
That's a very low bar.
I'm not questioning much yet, just because there's so many injuries right now. No LeBron, no Ariza, no THT, no Kendrick Nunn. And all four of those guys are going to be in the rotation when they're healthy. Wayne Ellington was like, not really sure what they did with him these last two games. They said he was available. He was dressed, but they weren't going to play him. I guess he was a breaking case of emergency. But those first four guys.
What might constitute an emergency?
A 26-point point lead.
A 36-point swing, maybe, just maybe.
Yeah.
Jenkins attempt from Malik Monk.
Yeah, if that wasn't a emergency, I'm not really sure why he was dressed. But yeah, I think you get those, start getting some of those guys back. Then you can kind of make some more observations about this roster. I agree with you that there's overall too many guards and not enough wings. But I'm not really sure how they address that issue now.
Yeah.
They decided on it.
Sitting at home.
James Ennis must have had the absolute worst workout with the Lakers ever, because like the report is he worked out with them. When you watch, like, they had to play Melo tonight because they simply just don't have any other fours. It's either play Melo at the four or play one of Dwight or DeAndre and go with a two big lineup down the stretch. Like, James Ennis must have been like Andrew Bynum shooting jumpers in the gym during that warm up or during that workout, because like, I don't know what he could have done to make them think that he isn't worth having on this roster over, like a Wayne Ellington. I'm not sure he's going to play much even when he's healthy.
Avery Bradley.
Yeah. So although he hit a couple big threes tonight, he was actually decent, but he wasn't decent on Wednesday. So I'm not really sure what he did, but yeah, this roster is reliant on LeBron, Ariza, some guys that you probably shouldn't be super reliant upon. So right now it's hard for me to criticize a whole lot, because there's a lot of guys playing that I just don't think are going to be in the rotation. I would be stunned if DeAndre Jordan's in the rotation much longer as they get healthier. Because even when he's been playing well the last couple games, he's still like, just his, what he does to the offense in general hurts them too much. And you saw the difference, and you see the difference every time they go to AD at center. It just opens things up. Rondo was briefly, I think that Grizzlies game, he didn't play. I think he's going to be out of the rotation when they get guys healthy and whatnot. And I would be surprised if Avery Bradley's in the rotation when they get guys healthy. So those are three guys who all played decent amount of minutes tonight that I don't know are going to be in the rotation when healthy. So I do think I don't want to say flawed roster. It's not the best optimized roster, but it's still one that has a lot of guys hurt right now. So kind of withholding judgment until we get some more guys healthy and get a better sense of what this is going to look like. But yeah, I mean, it's a roster kind of top heavy on guards and combo guards.
Yeah, I think that is a perfectly fair stance to take. I think it's perfectly fair to say that, you know, it's only five games, and in terms of health, these five games couldn't have gone much worse, right? Like,
yeah,
LeBron tweaks an ankle, AD tweaks a knee, you know, Kendrick Nunn, somebody who Frank Vogel said the other day that they really were, getting ready to rely on fairly heavily. He hasn't been available for any of them. Wayne Ellington was penciled in as a starter. Trevor Ariza was penciled in as a starter. So far this season, the Lakers have lost three starters, and the fourth starter there tweaked a knee to where we're not necessarily sure how close to 100% Anthony Davis is. I just think for my one kind of pushback is that, like, we knew that injuries were going to be an issue this year. Like, the Lakers planned for them. The reason they went out, they say that the reason they went out and got Russell Westbrook was so that if LeBron had to miss games, that you could kind of survive a little bit better. This looked like one of the games that we saw from last year where LeBron missed time. You know, it looked just like it. They look fine, they look great, and then they don't. And I think for while I find myself kind of agreeing with you, like, I'm probably like 60-40. I agree that we do have to hold out judgment and we shouldn't jump to too crazy of conclusions here. I also think it's fair to say, like, well, what do we think was going to happen? You know, this was always in the cards all along. And again, like, you can't predict injuries. You can't predict the fact that, like, you know, was it DeJounte Murray, right? Who like kind of bumped into 80. You can't predict that. You can't predict whatever player it was that landed on LeBron's ankle. You can't predict that. But you can predict a 38-year-old LeBron James getting hurt. Like, that's or missing time. If not getting hurt outright, but just kind of missing time. You probably could have predicted that. And like, also, if you're solution to this situation is an old Carmelo Anthony, and if your rotation gets thrown off the way that it has by losing a 36-year-old Trevor Ariza, like, you know, your t-shirt is doing a lot of the speaking here to go with that, that meme on there. I think they could very easily on Friday just bounce right back and take care of business. LeBron gets healthy. And a lot of the things that I tweet or that got tweeted or that get said in this show or on the lowdown, because I let it rip on the lowdown, winds up like, you know, sounding funny in the light. But I also think we have to go back and revisit some of the analysis about this roster back in the summer where people were saying, like, you know, say what you feel about the Russell Westbrook trade, but they knocked it out of the park with their peripheral signings. I can't quite agree there because of the very glaring need at wing, a position, by the way, that has been the most important position in the NBA since I've been covering it professionally.
I would say that they knocked it out just in terms of, like, value in a vacuum
with each signing.
But when it comes to, like, a constructing a roster, yeah, if you're relying this much upon a however old Trevor Ariza is, 36-year-old Trevor Ariza, then, like, it was pretty flawed to begin with. But yeah, I mean, the only counter I would have to your counter is that they probably didn't expect the injuries to come to Kendrick Nunn and THT and Monk for a week. But ultimately, those were all still positions that they had depth at. Maybe not THT. I think, I mean, based on this roster construction, I think he's going to play a fair amount of minutes at the three this season, maybe all of his minutes, because this team just doesn't have wings. And even as kind of smaller as he would be on the wing, he's wing sized ish. So, like, I think he's going to be in a lot of minutes at the three. Hell, during the preseason, albeit they guys weren't playing, he was playing the four at times. So, I think he's going to be valuable. And that one probably hurt as much as any as well, losing THT because, yeah, it forces you into situations where, like you were saying, Melo has to be on the floor during a possession that you have to get a defensive stop. And Melo looks really old defensively. There was a one play, Lou Dort got it on the wing and just took like one dribble to the right, just a basic crossover to the left, and he was gone past Melo.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh boy, this is rough.
I remember that specific play, and I remember laughing at it too, because Melo comes back and goes like, my bad.
Yeah, he was tapping on his, like, on his chest.
Who's that? Do you think we were seeing it might be?
Yeah, bud, you were on an island there, and you just let him walk by you. Like, everybody knew that was your bad. But like,
Anthony Davis is one of the greatest weak side defenders that we've ever seen, and he couldn't get into the key fast enough because Dort had a straight line, like, layup line there.
He, AD, if you watch that play, literally, because when he starts to go by Melo, like, I was like, oh, AD's there. And AD's kind of out on the wing, and he just kind of turns and looks. He's like, oh, damn, there's somebody at the rim. So, yeah, Melo, and also, Melo used up, like, every three-pointer for the rest of this month in that Grizzlies game, which, I mean, I guess they needed him to win that game, but good Lord, he was 1 of 8 from three tonight. He knocks down a couple of those because a lot of them came, I think, in the fourth quarter, or at least it felt like. If he knocks down a couple of those, it had been really helpful. But, I mean, that's another kind of goes to show that there was a lot of guys who really struggled tonight.
Yep. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of the Lakers Lounge. Not I Love Basketball because, you know, obvious reasons.
I do not love basketball tonight.
Not tonight. Not tonight. We will be back. So, kind of switching up the schedule. The Hook is going to be later today. Aaron and I are going to record that. And then I have a fun guest for my show, which usually airs on Mondays. That's actually going to air on Friday. So check out, keep an eye out for that as well. Until all of that, and until the Lakers figure some of this shit out, I'm Anthony Irwin. That was Jacob Rude, and this was The Lounge.